Welcome to the Pop Culture Pod Podcast. Now let's begin.
Podcast listener, and welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I'm your host. My name is Chris Lockhart, and this is the Deep Space Nine discussion panel, and we are discussing Deep Space Nine Season 7.0. And as always, I am not alone. First up, we have Mr. Richard Szabo. How's it going, Richard?
Doing well. Ready to get on. Let's do it.
Excellent. Next, we have Ragnar. How's it going, Ragnar?
Well, hello, everyone.
And last but not least, we have Mr. Curtis Holloway. How's it going, Curtis?
Well, I found out we were podcasting 2 minutes ago, but I'm here and I'm ready.
Excellent.
You're a very organized fellow, aren't you?
Yep.
Usually. I had the old date for tonight written down in my calendar here on the 26th, podcast at 8 p.m. I forgot to rewrite it in the new.
Gotcha.
Normally I'm pretty organized.
It's all good.
I'm just bugging.
All right, so where we left off with season six, Dax was killed, Jadzia Dax. Captain Sisko had a little bit of a, I wouldn't say a breakdown, but he took it hard and decided to leave Deep Space Nine to head back to Earth. So we last seen him, he was peeling potatoes at his father's restaurant, and the Dominion War is continuing. The wormhole has been closed in by Dukat and the Paul Wraiths, Dukat's an all around jerk for killing, in my opinion, the most beautiful woman in Star Trek. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's roll into season seven. Gotta get my stuff here. All right, so this is episode 151 of the series, first of the season, Image in the Sand, Stardate Unknown, directed by Les Landau, written by Ira Stephen Baer and Hans Beimler. Original air date, September 28th, 1998. With the Bajoran wormhole collapsed, Sisko struggles for a way to contact the Bajoran prophets. The Romulans receive permission from the Bajorans to open a military hospital on the moon Derna. General Martok offers Worf an opportunity to gain admission to Stovall Corp for Jadzia. It was an all right premiere. If I remember correctly, this is the one where Sisko gets stabbed. I'm trying to remember who stabbed him.
It was a member of one of the Paul Wraith clans or like organizations, and they were.
Yeah.
I believe they were upset with him.
Yeah. But for some reason, I thought the guy who stabbed him was like someone we know.
No, I think it was just a rando. Actually.
Just a random guy. Okay, for some reason I thought it was like I'm looking at the guest list and I'm not seeing any names sticking out. But anyway, so we get to see Joseph Sisko again, played by Brock Peters. Everyone's favorite grandpa.
And
our favorite red shirt colonel.
Yes, Colonel Kira. gets a promotion between the seasons.
Oh, I was meeting I think his name was Admiral or Colonel Cartwright in Star Trek.
Oh, Admiral Cartwright. Yeah, he Brock Peters was Admiral Cartwright
in the Maroons. Yeah.
Yeah, the Maroons.
Yeah, in Star Trek 4 and 6. You know, this episode we got Vic Fontaine, we got Admiral Ross, General Martok. We got all the big names. Jeffrey Combs was in it as Wayun, Casey Biggs as Damar. It was an all right opening episode. And then we also get introduced at the very end of the episode as they're about to embark on their, journey. Because Sisko has to find, he has a vision from the prophets. He has to find one of their,
the Orb of the Emissary.
The Orb of the Emissary. Yes, that's what it was. And then just as they're about to leave, a young Trill walks in. And she says, "It's me. It's Dax." It was a pretty good season premiere. I always like it when the Romulans get involved in something. They're probably my favorite adversary to the Federation besides the Dominion, and Even back then, I can't say I was thrilled when this new girl walks in and she says her name's Dax. I was like, ugh, it's too soon. Too soon. I was still upset with the death of Jadzia, and by this point, we were hearing some of the behind-the-scenes stuff, like in some of the sci-fi magazines that I, used to read back in the day. And, it seemed like Terry Farrell was... kind of screwed over, and I wasn't happy about that. So, not to knock on Ezri, but I really, even to this day, as much as I like Ezri, and I don't hate the character, I don't hate her, I just feel that we didn't need her. It would have been cool to have her, a Dax show up for an episode, just to maybe get some closure for Worf. Some closure for Ben. It would have been neat if the next Dax was a guy. That would have been kind of neat. I just felt that, with Terry Farrell leaving the series, I thought that maybe, that slot that she filled, could have been filled by so many other characters that we already have established. Like, there's so many characters. Like, it would have been cool to see Aaron Eisenberg maybe get, promoted to regular status. Regular cast status. I think that would have been cool. Again, not knocking Ezri. Richard, your thoughts on the premiere?
I actually really enjoyed it. I think that because of the nature of Benjamin and Dax's relationship, I think that I like the idea that they brought Dax back in that form, whether it was male or female or anything like that. I think I personally enjoy it, and so like that part never bothered me, and then later you get to see maybe not the beginning, but sort of like more into Damar's battle with alcoholism. He's definitely, putting on a lot of miles of that Kanar bottle. And Worf, he's definitely, upset. His wife just died. I still don't like the way they took her out. I think that there could have been a better way to, honorably let her leave the show. It seemed like a kind of a pathetic attempt at like, oh, well, some super strong dude shows up, smacks her around, and she dies.
Yeah.
That's not how Jadzia should have died. But going forward, that can't be changed. It's not something I, can change. Joseph, Ben's father, you know, they started talking about how Ben was born, and there was some really good, you know, scenes there when they finally figured out, you know, his mom wasn't actually his mom and things like that. So there was a lot of deposition in this. They learned a lot of things. So I think it was a really good episode. I enjoy this one, and I don't skip it.
Excellent. Ragnar, your thoughts?
Okay. I think as far as a season opener goes, when compared to the last couple of seasons, this is a really slow, not super engrossing beginning to a season.
Yeah.
There's lots of interesting stuff that is going on and that does happen, but it sure doesn't grab you and suck you in the way some of the previous season openers did. I have no issue with the actress who plays Ezri Dax. I just don't like the character because, okay, you killed off Dax. Now, there was a previous episode where Dax was reunited with a former lover, and that was a big cultural taboo.
Mm-hmm.
Why on earth would they let Ezri go back to DS9 where her husband, the husband of her previous host is? That is fraught with complications. There's no way that they would have allowed that. Like, that is a ultimate taboo. So that always really irked me. And I think that once they killed off Jadzia, they should have just brought in a new character to be the science officer and cast Noelle DeBoer and have her be Ezri Smith or whatever, Ezri Space Moon. Give her a different name and don't make her be Dax. And it would have been awesome. We have a new character, could bring some new excitement and some new enjoyment, and new relationships could be formed. I think that would have been very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But trying to recast a major character after six seasons is just, I think that's bogus. I think that was a really crappy move, and I think it kind of insults the previous actress as well as the fan base, and sets the new actress up for failure. So that's my biggest beef with Ezri Dax. I don't think she was a poorly portrayed, like a poor actress or anything. I just think they should have just made her be a different character, and it would have been totally great.
Yeah. And I just wanted to jump in and just add to that, because you had said about, you know, the previous life and they're not supposed to interact with, you know, people in their previous host's life and stuff. Also, in the season three episode, the one when we get the, what's the murderous Dax, when that personality starts coming out.
Duran,
yeah. And then we learn in that, because the Trills have this big thing where, you know, you got to basically, you know, compete to be joined. And it's a process. And then we find out in that episode that anybody can be joined. And the reason why they keep this illusion that, you know, not everyone can be joined, it's a process, is because, you know, people would be seeking out the symbionts as prizes rather than, you know, honoring them. So for Ezri, like, she just happened to be on the ship taking Dax back to the Trill homeworld when there's an accident, and they have to join the symbiont to somebody, or it'll die. So, and she's the only Trill on the ship. So again, that goes against their cover story, because now it's like, well, why could she host Dax and there's no issue? You know,
it was like a medical emergency situation or something. Yeah. I believe that was why. So, I mean, it kind of makes sense. You know, try to the reduction of harm against the
Trill. Oh, no, right? I understand that part. It's just it goes against the Trill cover story, right? Because we know, as the viewers, and Captain Sisko and all them, they know that anyone can be joined. But publicly, nobody really knows that. So, they could have just explained it away and said, well, what do you know? You know, we lucked out. This one worked. Which is, I guess, what they probably did. But anyway, Curtis, your thoughts.
I'm so glad that the three of you had all of that to say, because I agree with most of it, and of course the obligatory disclaimer regarding Jedzia Dax, Terry Farrell, all those things. Definitely agreed on all points, but unfortunately, I encounter my kryptonite in this episode. As soon as Ezri Dax came on screen for the first time, I unfortunately, well, not even unfortunately, I was instantly completely smitten. And just, that was it. It was the biggest boost to my suspension of disbelief that they could have thrown at me. Just because, straight up, I find Nicole DeBoer to be just absolutely gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't get over that at the time. So that sort of clouded my judgment on the rest of the episode. Like Ragnar said, it's a little plodding and dry. It's not a very exciting beginning of the season. But, you know, it is what it is at this point. But I was able to ignore all of that just because now we have Ezri. Maybe that's because I don't have any taste or whatever. But, yeah, there's not much I can add that you guys haven't already said.
All right, cool. All right, so next episode is episode 152, second of the season, Shadows and Symbols, Stardate 52152.6, directed by Alan Croker, written by Ira Stephen Baer and Hans Beimler, original air date October 5th, 1998. A new Dax appears on the scene. Sisko's quest leads him to the truth about his existence. The discovery that the Romulan hospital is heavily armed leads Colonel Kira to set up a blockade of Derna. Bashir, O'Brien, and surprisingly Quark join Worf and Martok in a dangerous mission to destroy the Dominion shipyard in order to get Jadzia to Stovall Corr. Well, first up, another issue I have, I'm sure the thing is, the way the Star Trek writers' rooms used to work, and I'm sure this season was no exception, is usually, you know, at the end of a season, they do their finale, and then, you know, they get a couple months off, and then they come back, or they regroup, and then they brainstorm ideas. How do we, you know, what are we going to do this season? How are we going to bring everything back together? Are we going to bring everything back together? Blah, blah, blah. So, this idea that Sisko's biological mother was one of the prophets, I don't like that. I really don't like that. You know, like, I have no issues with, you know, like, this, because, I mean, leading up to this, I mean, they set it up that, you know, like, the emissary was prophesized to come and unite Bajor and bring peace to Bajor and all that kind of stuff. And it's cool that Sisko is Bajor, you know, is the emissary. It's cool that, you know, right from episode one, Kyle Paca said, you know, the one who doesn't want to be among us is destined to be the emissary. I like that, because by season 7, you know, Sisko's done a complete 180. Like, you know, for the first episode, he didn't really want to be there. He was actually thinking about quitting Starfleet. And now, you know, 7 years later, you know, he loves the role of the emissary. He believes in Bajor. He, you know, we find out later in the season, he plans to build a house. Well, I guess he stated that to Admiral Ross last season, that when he retires, he's going to, you know, build a house on Bajor. So that's cool that, you know, this guy that didn't want to be there in the first place ends up loving, you know, the role and the people. But then they throw this wrinkle in, like, oh, well, it was always his destiny. His mom was one of the prophets. And I'm like, I don't like that. Like, to me, it kind of diminishes, and I know I'm reading way too much into this, to me it kind of diminishes, you know, his character development, because if he was always supposed to, if this was his destiny, like he had no choice in it, then it, you know, all his character development doesn't really matter, like, it, you know, to me. And I mean, we see this in, like I'm a comic book reader, so I see this a lot in comic books, where they will take an established character, and they'll, like, do this thing where, well, you know, they were always destined to do this. They were, you know, I didn't like that. I didn't like that. And I know why they did it now, you know, because like I said, you know, during these writing sessions, they plan out the season. So they knew, like, we're going to have this big showdown between Dukat and Sisko. And, you know, it's going to be the fire caves and, you know, one of them has to, you know, die. But how, you know, like, so how are we going to keep Sisko alive? You know, how could he, you know, how can we avoid this? And it's like, well, let's have his mom be one of the prophets. And then that way, you know, he won't die. He'll just go with the prophets. Like, I know that's what happened. And like I said, it just feels hollow, feels forced. I never liked it. That being said, when I did my rewatch a few years ago, the actress that plays his biological mom is actually an actress from the TV series Mad Men. She was Don Draper's housemaid for the first four seasons, I want to say. Because when I rewatched this, it really bothered me. I'm like, I know that chick. I know I've seen her somewhere before. And then, yeah, she went to be on Mad Men. But, yeah, so anyway, I've rambled on long enough. Ragnar, what's your thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, complete agreement with everything you just said about, you know, the true origins of Sisko's mom. I also would like to say, you know, I feel like they could probably, given that that's the backstory they've chosen and that this is the direction they're going, you could probably almost do a whole flashback episode about, you know, young Grandpa Sisko meeting the mom, because there's got to be some weird, like, there's got to be a crazy story about how that happened that I'd love to see fleshed out more. Otherwise, for me, the most exciting part of this episode is, of course, the whole we have to go score a huge victory to get her into Stovacor plot.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that plot. I like the idea. And I love when, Quark joins in on it, because he's just like, hey, I loved her too, you know?
Yep.
And I just thought that was pretty great. So I like that part of the episode. But I got to say, as a whole, I don't like season 7 as much as I like seasons 5 and even seasons 4, 5, and 6. I think 4, 5, and 6 was where it really hit its stride. And season 7, it's not a bad season, but it never blows my socks off the way seasons 5 and 6 do.
Yeah, I was actually thinking that exact same thing today, just prior to recording. Other than the last 10 episodes, like that 10-episode story arc they did to close out the series, I think was absolutely brilliant. Mm-hmm. I wish they had done that on Next Generation, because there was, you know, like, they were able to close out so many storylines and stuff that, you know, they had built throughout the series. You know, not everything got resolved, but a lot got resolved. Whereas TNG kind of just left everything out up in the air. But anywho, Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Yeah, I don't know. I find the Tyree portion where they're in the desert and digging and all that good stuff sort of dry. For me, the highlight is, like Ragnar said, the action on the Klingon ship. That's where this episode's worth watching for me. It's just hilarious, as always, whenever you put Quark in the same room. But as someone who's not, like, as big of a fan as – I'm definitely a fan of the Klingons. Not as big as everyone else in here, I don't think. I definitely appreciate the more Klingon aspect of this episode more than I appreciate them in most other episodes, probably. Other than that, you guys have pretty much said what I already wanted to say.
Excellent.
Pretty much agree.
Richard, your thoughts, sir?
Well, I'm going to go against the grain here, because I don't think that I like the idea that you could just go do something you know, and something else happens in that way, that means that, like, every dishonorable Klingon could just have a name, like an event in his or her name, and then, oh, they'll get to go to Stovacor too. It's sort of like, from my perspective, it sort of takes away from the idea of, you know, this kind of, like, honorable death. And I know that it was for Worf, and it was his kind of closure. I don't know if I like the way they framed it, personally. And I also, I don't like that Quark, where was I going with that? He's very, I think he's more going for himself and how he feels, as opposed to how much he may or may not respect, you know, the, you know, Klingon beliefs and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
The action was fun. Everything was cool about it. I just don't know if I like the whole idea behind it. That's just me, though. But I really liked, for me, the B plot of the blockade of Derna.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was in this yep. episode as well.
It really didn't make sense, did it?
The B plot, like,
didn't serve a lot of purpose.
It did, but I was thinking to myself, like, it made sense that the Romulans would try to sneak in some subterfuge, because that's the kind of people they are.
That's what they do. That's
yeah, exactly, but with Colonel Kira using her new powers to go and make a blockade out of ancient derelict ships, I don't know, it didn't really... That part just didn't fly with me.
She could have done something else. Literally, like, one Romulan warbird could take out a fleet of those silly ships. Yeah, I think it was more to make a stand, like, make a statement, and hoping that, you know, her bluff wouldn't be called, because she knew she would have got her ass beat.
Yep.
And then the whole Dr. Wyckoff thing, the Benny sort of, like, flashback mm-hmm. that Sisko has was kind of, yep. You know, the action was good with the Klingons, whether I liked the idea or not, that was fun to watch. Aside from that, like, it was kind of an kind of episode, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, I will add a couple things. Seeing Casey Biggs as the Doctor, I thought was cool. I love, you know, seeing, you know, the brother Benny, you know, like when they did the episode earlier last season, and now this season. It's cool seeing those actors that are normally in makeup just as humans. So I thought seeing Casey Biggs was really cool. And the Bashir O'Brien Quark Worf Martok thing, I actually kind of, you know, like I see where you're coming from, Rich, but I kind of like it, because I like those stories where the boys get together for, you know, and go on some, you know, dangerous mission. To me, it's kind of reminiscent.
Or Path to Kalhaya.
Yeah, something like that. To me, it's kind of reminiscent of Star Trek 3. You know, when they stole the Enterprise, when all, you know, Kirk and the boys steal the Enterprise. I just love that. The fact that they're all working together, you know, for something, you know, that's not necessarily, you know, for the greater good. You know, but it is for the, in this case it is. I mean, it, you know, if you believe in Stovacor and all that. But yeah, so anyway, next episode is 153rd of the series, third of the season, After Image, Stardate Unknown, directed by Les Landau, written by Rene Echevarria, original air date October 12th, 1998. Everyone who knew Jadzia Dax reacts strongly to Ezri's presence, particularly Worf. Meanwhile, Garak suffers from bad attacks of claustrophobia. So yeah, with this episode... just clicking on it, and there's an image of Nicole. How do you say your last name? DeBoer?
DeBoer.
Man, she's beautiful. Anyway, I like the you know, like that Garak. You know, he has this breakdown, and it totally makes sense. You know, like he, you know, as much as he hates the Dominion and he wants Cardassia to be free of the Dominion, he knows that by helping Starfleet, you know, Cardassians are going to be killed, and that you know, and that weighs heavy on them. I like that, you know, that they showed that. And then yeah, seeing Worf I think this is the episode when he grabs Dr. Bashir and basically warns him off of Ezri. I thought that was great. But yeah, it's not an overall not a like awesome episode. It's one of those. It's like a, you know, like we're still processing the after effects of the 2-part season premiere. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Yeah, it was nice to see Garak in a vulnerable position. Cardassians tend to, even if they're not, you know, very in control of a situation, and they usually are, they at least project that they're very in control of, at the very least, themselves, if not the situation around them. So it was interesting to see Garak, of all Cardassians, you know, he was once the right hand of the head of the Obsidian Order, and, you know, prodigy, blah, blah, blah. So that was cool. I like that we got to know Ezri a little bit. I'm against the grain, I guess, in this chat, but I love Ezri. I don't even mind that she was Dax so much. Still doesn't make what they did to Jadzia or Terry Farrell okay, but I'm definitely an Ezri fan. So we kind of got to get to know her a little bit, and she's played very well, I think. And you start to see that in this episode. So, yeah, good episode. Sometimes I accidentally nap through it. It's never like an intentional nap episode, you know, but sometimes.
Yeah. Well, and again, I just want to stress, I don't hate Ezri. I do like her. But, yeah. I don't want to get too much into it, but and Nicole DeBoer is amazingly beautiful. Richard, your thoughts, sir?
I don't know that I have much to add. I do appreciate that they showed Garak's sort of like lesser strong and in control side. It is a huge thing. Like what he did is definitely destroying him a little bit, and he needs sort of like to get through that. I think there was some kind of B plot, but I'm not really feeling it. Aside from that, it's a decent episode. I don't usually skip it.
And Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
I don't have a whole lot more to say than what's already been said. You know, it was neat to see the more vulnerable side of Garak, because it just added more depth to his character and made him a more fleshed out, believable character. And, yeah, I mean, you know, we get to see how Ezri interacts. And again, I just got to say, I think if they had just made her not be Dax and just made her be a new science officer, you could have had all the same things happen. And it just would have been better, in my opinion. So,
well, and
again, yeah.
And speaking of that, they never replaced the science officer. Like, because Ezri is technically the counselor.
Right. Yeah, you're right. That's a good point. Huh. That's kind of a glaring omission.
But, you know, like the thing is, during this time, they're, you know, like, honestly, Jadzia wasn't doing a lot of sciencing these last few years with the war going on and all that. So I guess maybe they didn't need a science officer at this time. All right. Well, I believe I went around the table for everybody. Curtis, did you have anything to say about this episode? I can't remember.
I didn't have much to say, but I did say it.
Oh, okay. Just kind of lost my spot here. All right, well, let's move on to the next episode. That is episode 154, fourth of the season. Take Me Out to the Hollow Suite, Stardate Unknown, directed by Chip Chalmers, written by Ronald D. Moore, original air date October 19th, 1998. Sisko must train his staff to play baseball when the Vulcan captain Solok, an old rival of his, challenges Sisko to a game while his ship is being repaired. This was a fun episode, but it could have been so much funner. I don't think funner's a name or a word. if the captain hadn't been Vulcan, and if the other team hadn't been made up of Vulcans, like, I wish this was just like a buddy of Sisko's, you know, like Sisko must have had a lot of, like, he had Cal Hudson, that was one of his buddies, but obviously he's, you know, deceased at this point. You know, I just wish, like, the other team was made up of, you know, not to sound racist to Vulcans or whatever, but they were boring. You know, like, that Solok, you know, he was doing his best, you know, doing his trash talk and being a dink, but I think it would have been so much funner if it had been, like, a human captain, you know, like, and he's giving Sisko a hard time, like an old buddy. You know, like that one friend of yours that you're always kind of competitive with, and you just want to beat him this one time. And I know that's what they were going for, but to me it just didn't have the same effect because the Vulcans were so emotionless. Like, they didn't really care. Well, Solok kind of cared at the end, but I just kind of wish that, you know, like, it had been like a human, you know, captain. You know, we could have had some trash talking, but it was fun. You know, like, it was fun to see Odo as the umpire, of course. It was fun to see Rom just, you know, screwing everything up royally and Sisko losing his shit. You know, and I totally get that. You know, having played, because I used to play softball, I used to play fastball, I used to play slow pitch. There's always somebody on your team that, you know, is just there because for whatever reason and they're not good, and you just get mad at them because, you know, they're fumbling up and screwing things up, and especially if it's like an important game. Like, I totally, like, when Sisko loses it on Rom, like, I totally get it, because, you know, I've seen that happen. I like, you know, them bringing baseball. Like, that's something I've always liked about Deep Space Nine, is Sisko's love of baseball. And I know it comes straight from Michael Piller, because Michael Piller, one of the creators of Deep Space Nine, was a huge baseball fan. And I know they used to, like, do these nods to Michael Piller. So I know, like, Ronald Moore, he wrote this episode. I know this is exactly, he did this for Michael Piller, no doubt, to honor him. Because Michael Piller actually gave him his start in Star Trek. Michael Piller, like, back in the TNG days, when Michael Piller came on as a showrunner for the writer's room of TNG in Season 3, he had this open submission policy where he would actually get, you know, if you wanted to write a Star Trek episode, you could actually write a Star Trek episode and submit it. He would look it over, and if he liked it, he'd bring you on. And that's what happened to Ronald Moore. I think Ronald Moore's like a veterinarian or a dentist or something prior to this, and then, yeah, he was just a fan of Star Trek and then submitted his script and got hired on, and I really think this episode is, you know, him showing some love for Michael Piller. But anywho, I digress. Richard, your thoughts, sir?
I actually really enjoyed it. To be honest, I think that there's not enough exposure to Vulcans in Deep Space Nine. I really like the Vulcans a lot. I'm a big fan. And I really like that there's no real camaraderie there, but they're both Starfleet officers, so sir, there's some camaraderie, but there's a great deal of competition. And I kind of, like, empathized with Sisko, because I would have been much the same way, especially if it was, like, say, like, wrestling, for example. Human wrestling of Vulcan. Oh, we all know how that's usually going to go. And, you know, I totally feel Sisko on this one and how into it he gets. But at the end, he kind of realizes, like, hey, we're going to just have fun. And then he puts Rom back in the game.
Yep.
And personally, I really like it. The Logicians, the name of the team of the Vulcans, I thought was just hilarious. And, of course, they have to pick Odo to be the umpire because he's, like, the most, you know, unbiased person that you could have in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
Even more so than a Vulcan. I think it's a great episode. I like this episode a lot. And it was a lot of fun. And it was sort of like a, you know, a mini arc to itself where, like, Cisco has to, you know, let go of some of this competitive nature and, you know, just enjoy it for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like it. It's a good episode.
I was thinking, when I was saying, like, about how it would have been cool to have, like, it be one of Cisco's friends, that captain that went after them, like, when they were on the Jem'Hadar ship back in the beginning of Season 6, oh, is his name Johnny Reynolds or Tommy Reynolds? Something like that. It would have been cool if that was, like, some guy that was name-dropped that we actually get to meet later on. I think that would have been cool. To see. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Well, I think it was neat to see a baseball episode because we've always known that Cisco was obsessed with baseball.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of cool. And for me, the standout of the episode was Odo as the umpire. Like, that was just perfect. But as a whole, I don't find that this episode has much rewatch value. I think if you're really into baseball, it's probably more interesting. I never really got to play baseball as a kid, so I never developed much of an interest in it. I don't dislike baseball, but I don't know enough about it to really appreciate anything in the episode, so I actually tend to just skip this one when I rewatch the seasons.
Interesting. Like I said, I was able to play ball growing up, and actually, I played a little bit last year, but I'm getting too old.
Cool.
Well,
you have to be the umpire.
Yeah. Well, that. Oh, I don't. That's almost worse. I hate umping. I just now I'm at the point in my life I don't want to hurt myself. You know, like last year I went to catch a pop fly and I literally did like a face plant. And I'm thinking, you know. They're not as easy to walk off as I get older, right? And I'm just worried, like, you know, if I break a knee or break an ankle, like, just working wise, right? I don't know. I think I'll do, like, my sister, my brother-in-law still play ball, so I think I'll just go watch them and cheer them on and maybe base coach. But growing up around baseball and playing it, I got to tell you, seeing Chase Masterson and Penny Johnson and the Na Visitor wearing baseball uniforms, that was pretty hot. I've got to tell you. It was like, wowza. It's like, you know, my love of baseball and my love of Star Trek women combined. It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. It's Ragnar. It's worth it just to watch them playing ball. I'm telling you.
You might be onto something.
Trust me. Trust me. I am. Curtis, your thoughts, sir.
Well, that's certainly worthy of investigation for sure. I might have to rewatch again myself. I enjoy this episode. It's one of those silly, lighthearted ones that we usually get closer to the middle of a season, but I'm glad it shows up here. It doesn't do anything for the plot, really, mm-hmm. but it's an enjoyable enough episode. It's nice to just not take it so seriously for a minute sometimes. And actually, two of my favorite lines in the series are from this episode. One is near the end where the Vulcan team captain tells Cisco that he's attempting to manufacture a triumph where none exists. And Cisco says, "Manufacture triumph! Hear, hear!" And the whole bar gets behind him and raises their glass. And it was nice to see Cisco go from being this domineering, dour, serious coach in the beginning to, you know, just this downright silly kind of guy at the end. And, of course, that would enrage a Vulcan.
Yep.
That was I like that part of the episode. The other line being where O'Brien and Bashir are walking to the Hollow Suite, and O'Brien gives Bashir some gum, and he's like, "Yeah, they used to chew this in the dugout," and whatever. He tells the story about, you know, what he's doing, and it came in all sorts of flavors. And Bashir says, "Oh, so what flavor did you get?" And O'Brien says, "Scotch." Replicated some scotch flavored bubble gum, which I always appreciated. I got to know what that tastes like someday.
Excellent. Yeah, it was definitely nice to have this type of episode, considering like the last six episodes were pretty heavy. Like when you really think about it, it was nice to have, you know, just a lighthearted, fun episode for a change. All right, so the next episode, 155th of the series, fifth of the season, Chrysalis, stardate unknown, directed by Jonathan West, written by Renee Echevarria, original date, October 26, 1998. Bashir falls for a genetically enhanced patient, Serena Douglas, that he brought out of a catatonic state using an experimental medical procedure. I gotta say, Dr. Bashir is kind of like the Geordi of Deep Space Nine when it comes to love. You know, like, like he just can't catch a break. And I gotta tell you, even as I was watching this, I remember thinking, this is Ron. You know, like, he should not be falling in love with her, you know? It just seemed wrong to me, you know? I don't know. Maybe it's because there was that movie. What was it called? With Robin Williams and Robin Williams and, where the guy's in a coma for like 30 years and he comes out of the coma. Awakenings. This kind of reminded me of Awakenings. And I don't know, I just kind of felt like Bashir shouldn't be going there. You know what I mean? Not just the fact that, you know, this woman is his patient, but also, you know, she is so innocent, you know, like, I don't know. It just always kind of rubbed me the wrong way. Ragnar, your thoughts on this episode?
I like this episode overall. I think you're right. There is a bit of a, perhaps even a moral quandary there with Bashir. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, I like seeing his super intelligent but very eccentric buddies. You know, I always get a kick out of them. I think that they're kind of like Kramer in Seinfeld. They're very amusing in small doses, but if you put too much attention on them, they just get annoying.
Well,
if
I remember correctly, when he gets her awakened and then he starts, you know, thinking, doesn't he ship the rest of them off? Like, you don't see them again, right? For the rest of the episode?
I believe you're right.
Very suspicious behavior on Dr. Bashir's part.
That's not correct. They stick around.
Do they?
She stops talking again. And
okay.
They have to figure out that she can still talk. She's just choosing not to.
Okay. I'm misremembering. I think I might have skipped this one during my rewatch. But sorry, Ragnar, I interrupted you.
Oh, well, so anyways, yeah, I think they're interesting, and I like the, you know, kind of questions they pose about, you know, genetically modified humans and you know, their potential and what it would be like. But for the most part, they're just kind of used as comic relief in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's an interesting episode. I honestly think it could have been written better, because I think they're hitting on some interesting topics, but they're not really going into anything of note. So I think it's an interesting episode, but it maybe feels a little bit underdeveloped to me.
Yeah. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
That's a stupid question. Which is another one of my favorite lines from the series. And I have when Patrick dresses up as an admiral and they kind of, you know, sneak onto Deep Space Nine disguised as Starfleet admirals, I thought that was just You know, it's another one of those lighthearted ones that I really enjoy with a lovely musical number in the middle somewhere, by memories. They do a little a cappella thing, I think. Yeah, I mean, it's been said, there's not too much to say. It's enjoyable enough. And a nice break from all the dour war, doom, and destruction that's been going on.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And Richard, your thoughts, sir? Richard?
Yeah, sorry.
Oh.
Apparently my microphone was muted. I actually really like this episode. I really like Abro Patrick, personally. He's a really good character. It just makes me laugh at the fact that, you know, the other two are his, like, you know, aides, his staff, as it were, and getting through all of these situations just by telling people that that's a stupid question.
It
just,
and Nog looks so terrified when he's doing
right? He's like, oh no, it's an admiral. I'm going to get, you know, decommissioned for this or something like that. And it's just a really fun episode. And I do really like the musical number where they kind of like improvise, you know, Do Re Mi a cappella, which I rather enjoyed. The whole love story thing, yeah, I mean, the Nightingale effect thing, the trope, is sort of overdone in general. I don't know if I would have written that personally, but it makes sense in some ways. But he does sort of try to allay some of that moral quandary by, you know, changing her doctor and things like that, just so that, you know, he's not in that position anymore, which also makes sense. Yeah, aside from that, I thought it was a pretty fun episode, and I enjoyed it.
Excellent. All right. The next episode is episode 156, sixth of the season, Treachery, Faith, and the Great River, stardate unknown, directed by Steve Posey, written by, story by Philip Kim, teleplay by David Weddle and Bradley Thompson, original air date November 2nd, 1998. Avorted defector Wayun 6 gives Odo valuable information in exchange for his asylum. Wayun 7, the next clone in the series, pursues them. Meanwhile, Nog engages in a series of barters to get a graviton stabilizer for Miles. I really like this episode. So this is the episode that we learn that the founders are ill. And... you know, I like the fact that, you know, this Wayun is, I don't know if defective is the right word, but, you know, he believes in Odo and doesn't believe in the Dominion. And also, I like the B story, like with Nog trading all this, you know, Sisko, or sending Sisko's desk off station and you know, doing all this goofy stuff to get this graviton stabilizer. You know, I love seeing, like, the Ferengi side of Nog. You know, like, he's a Starfleet officer, but he's also a Ferengi, I believe is how he puts it. So, yeah, this I really enjoyed this episode. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Yet another one of these enjoyable, in my opinion, mostly lighthearted episodes. Even when you've got the defective Wayun on the shuttle, he's sampling the menu, but we cut into a scene and we see him eat a slice of pepperoni off of a slice of pizza. That's all we see him eat, and he goes, well, I couldn't eat another bite. And I thought that was just hilarious. But honestly, it was all about the B story for me in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Nog being Nog. Aaron Eisenberg, is that his
Eisenberg name?
Aaron Eisenberg and Colm Meaney do so well in scenes together. I mm-hmm. wish there was more of it. We'll talk about that when we do our next podcast episode. I wish there was more of that in Deep Space Nine, because mm-hmm. they have a really good thing going on screen.
Yep.
But yeah, like you say, it's just hilarious. Although, really, it would have made more sense to just beam the plans for Sisko's desk, that dude who wanted the picture, in my opinion. But who am I? I am not a Ferengi, and I do not sail the Great River.
Yeah.
So definitely an episode I enjoy. This is not a skip episode for me. It's a lot of fun. I'll usually
using it as a snack just because mayonnaise eating makes me hungry. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
Pizza looks so good.
Excellent. Richard, your thoughts, sir?
You know what? I love this episode. The A-plot is kind of, you know, there's a lot of deposition and, like, you learn some things. But it's kind of boring. And it is sad, though, because it's a way Yoon that defected and would have been really, okay, I need to add that in to make a mental note that I would have liked to have seen Wei Yun make it back to Deep Space Nine and sort of, like, become a de facto, you know, member of the crew, kind of like Garak, and helping them out. And that would have been really fun to see the interplay, to have, you know, Wei Yun, Geoffrey Coombs on the show a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I need to make a mental note and talk about that a bit. But the Great River, for me, was the big seller. It's just such a, like, a Ferengi thing, and Nog may not be quote-unquote like a typical Ferengi, and he may be a Starfleet officer, but he sails the Great River, and he kicks its ass straight up. He gets better blood wine than he wanted. He gets the part that he was looking for. He gets Sisko's desk back, all these things, and it just kind of, like, all clicks into place. It's like 1, 2, 3, 4, just as, like, a, you know, like a clock ticking, just like click, 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 boom, and it's great. I love this episode. I love the Ferengi B plot. And that's all I got to say about that, really.
Yep. And I love the fact that O'Brien catches the shit. You know, like, everyone's like, because he's using O'Brien's code, right? So he's always getting blamed for everything that Nog's been up to. And then, yeah, it all works out at the end. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Well, I like what you guys were saying. I love the whole bit about, you know, Nog doing his trading, you know, using his skills and, I don't know, not biology, but his ancestry of being a Ferengi, but using it for the betterment of the Federation, you know, in his own little way. I thought that was great. I thought that was a lot of fun. And other than that, I don't have much to say that you guys haven't already said. It's not particularly standout episode or anything.
Excellent. All right. Well, let's move on to the next episode, episode 157, seventh of the season. Once more, Unto the Breach. Stardate Unknown, directed by Alan Croker, written by Ronald D. Moore. Original air date, November 9th, 1998. Core from Star Trek, the original series, and Season 2, Episode 19, Blood Oath, and Season 4, Episode 9, The Sword of Kaelas. He's an aging Klingon hero, and he asks Worf to find him a battle assignment. Martok plans a cavalry raid of 5 birds of prey, hitting several key targets behind enemy lines to throw them off balance. I gotta say, this is one of my favorite episodes of the season. I love Kor. I love, the episodes he's been in Deep Space Nine. And this is one of those episodes, like, because we, the viewer, know there's something wrong with Kor. You know, when he's, forgetting where he's supposed to be and all that, and and it's like, oof, you know, you feel for the guy. And then he had the death that Jadzia should have had. He went out in battle and did things that amazed Martok and Worf and the rest of the Klingons that, you know, that he saved. And he went out as a badass, you know. And, like, he obviously was reaching the end of his days. You know, he was obviously getting the Klingon version of Alzheimer's. And it was nice to see him go out as a hero. And I love the subplot of Martok hating Kor. That Kor, Martok rose up to prominence despite Kor, that actually Kor, kind of looked down on Martok when he was coming up, And now, you know, Kor is, you know, kind of has nothing, and he's, you know, and has to rely on Worf to help him out. All around, I really enjoyed this episode. I thought it was a fitting end to this character. Like I said, I wish, you know, Dax had gone out this way. And, yeah, it was a great episode. Richard, your thoughts, sir?
I actually really liked this episode. It was a good sort of end to that Kor arc.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, the backstory of Martok and Kor just really made sense, because many years ago, even probably still in current day, but more so I think in the past, was their caste system and how that worked. And he was just a peasant from the lowlands, and Kor was noble born, blah blah blah. And then here we are now. General Martok, essentially the supreme commander of the fleet, eventually to become the chancellor, is like, okay, no, F that guy. He screwed me over, and I'm just doing this and that. And then eventually he's like, okay, we'll give him, I don't know, third weapons officer, some low rate position, you know, just as like a little shiv in the side of Kor. Like, you used to be one of the greatest officers in the Empire, and now you're just a third-rate weapons officer. Mm-hmm. But then somehow he manages to pull that victory out of his behind, and he just, you know, kills the game, and somehow they win, and it's pretty awesome.
Excellent. Yeah. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Well, yeah, this is a killer episode. You know, a little bit bittersweet. It is the last episode that we'll ever, you know, see Kor in, unless they do some horrible stuff in Discovery or something, which is entirely possible, but we're going to pray they don't. So, yeah, it's a great episode. I love the whole bit about, you know, Martok being petty, because it's not really something we've seen him do before. And it was neat to see, you know, like there was sort of a classist thing going on. And I got a real kick out of that. And it also seemed perfectly believable. And Martok was very understandable as to why he was behaving the way he was. And so, yeah, I got a kick out of that. I think it's a solid episode. Definitely not one to skip.
Excellent. And Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Well, I'm going to talk a little bit less about the episode and more about the effect it has. There's some Star Trek episodes here and there, mm-hmm. Not many of them, thankfully, that just, for me, they're a cause for reflection. They sort of force me to ask questions and examine aspects of, you know, life and death for myself, and this is one of those episodes. The last month or so, I've in my own life been forced to deal with some questions about the nature of life and death and these sorts of things, and to see Kor in the state that he's in this episode, I don't know, it just sort of reminds me of the TNG episode where Wuxana Troi falls for that Timison dude, that scientist guy who's turning 60, and in his culture, you know, they commit ritual suicide.
Yep.
And I'm not suggesting that. Before anybody jumps down my throat, I'm not suggesting that, you know, that's what we must do. But I can certainly start to understand why someone might, or a culture might, look at considering something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the episodes like this one that really get me thinking. And honestly, I spend half the episode just daydreaming and stuck in my own thoughts about this sort of thing. So I really appreciate that they include topics like this, like confronting, you know, this is a very real thing that happens to people. And, you know, as far as, I'll bring it back a little bit just to the episode, it was super cool to see Kor get the send-off that he did. As far as the Klingon culture and values and traditions go, what more could you ask for as a warrior?
Mm-hmm.
But to go out like absolutely stomping on your enemy and securing victory for your side while everyone else, you know, escapes and goes on to continue the fight. Yeah. How cool that, you know, super cool, but I'm not going to ramble for too much more. I really appreciate the episodes where they ask questions that may not always be comfortable. Mm-hmm. It might make you think about things that you prefer not to ponder. And this is one of those, and I like it for that reason more so than any other.
And just to jump on what you just said, and this is why Roddenberry Berman Star Trek is so awesome, is because they can do things like this and not hit you over the head with it like they do with Star Trek Discovery.
Well, that's part of it. Like, you let the audience fill in their own gaps, and that makes it better. No one wants to be spoon-fed entertainment or any sort of moral question that's being asked or point that's being made. You gotta give some latitude,
yep,
I think, to the audience to come up with their own answers.
Yep, absolutely.
For sure.
All right, next episode is 158th of the series, 8th of the season, and it is The Siege of AR-558, Stardate Unknown, directed by Winrich Kolbe, written by Ira Steven Behr and Hans Beimler, original air date November 16th, 1998. Sisko and the crew relieve Starfleet troops under siege by the Jem'Hadar at a key communication outpost, AR-558, the largest Dominion communications array in the sector. This was, I think, a great episode. It's one of those episodes that definitely drives home that, yes, this is war that our characters are in. And, you know, poor Nog loses his leg in this episode. And again, you know, like getting back to the Berman Roddenberry Star Trek about how they will throw things out there. Like when Quark talks about humans and about how, you know, when they're warm and comfortable and fed, you know, they don't, you know, they're great to be around. But when you put them in a situation where, you know, they're not comfortable and things are not going good, that they could turn on you. And that's kind of something he's trying to drive home to Nog. I got a couple notables here as well. The character of Vargas is played by an actor named Raymond Cruz, who would later go on to play Tuco Salamanca on Breaking Bad and the spinoff Better Call Saul. So it was cool to see, when I did my rewatch, to see him as a younger man in this, you know, because it's like 10 years before Breaking Bad. And also, the character of Kellen is played by Bill Mumy. And for those who don't know, Bill Mumy was Lanier on Babylon 5, and he was also Will Robinson in the original Lost in Space series from the 1960s. So it was cool to see him in this episode as a human, like not in his makeup, as Lanier, because that's how I know him best, because I'm a huge Babylon 5 fan. So it was cool to see him, you know, cross the universes and play a character in Star Trek. I thought that was really cool. All right, Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Well, I think this is, for me anyways, one of the definite highlight episodes of this season. And it once again showcases one of the things that was so different in DS9 versus some of the other franchises, was that it got dark and it got gritty and it, you know, it got right down in the trenches.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying the other Star Treks were all happiness and light and happy-go-lucky, but this is a really heavy, dark episode, and you don't see a whole lot of that in Star Trek. And it was very well done, very well written, very well acted. I think this is a stellar episode. I'm not sure if it's my favorite episode of the season, but it's definitely in my top two or three favorite episodes of this season. And, maybe it's not quite for the faint of heart, perhaps, but I think this is a killer episode. I definitely recommend it.
Excellent. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Well, not unlike the last episode, this one, too, puts some, you know, interesting questions in front of us to ponder. Like Ragnar said, it gets very dark, very gritty. War is a reality, and we watch it in the comfort of our living rooms on the news for the last, at least since I was in high school, there have been, you know, constant wars going on, and it seems so far away. But when you're forced to confront it, like it's right in front of you on that TV that you're watching comfortably, you can sort of start to ponder some things you wouldn't otherwise ponder. And that's, I think there's some value in that. At the very least, maybe it can make you consider how, you know, how people might feel if they're in that position, like Nog lying on that bed with Vic Fontaine playing. That's got to be the loneliest that a person can feel just about. And we wouldn't normally think about that kind of thing because we like to be comfortable and warm with full bellies, don't we? So, again, I appreciate this episode for just blasting us in the face with some truth.
Yep.
While still being very enjoyable. I personally like it. I like seeing some battle action, you know, some tactics. Let's salvage this thing and rebuild it. And this is why we're holding this objective. It's not just, we need to hold this post. It's, we need to hold this because, and then we'll have a reason. I can buy into it. So that's nice. Definitely an enjoyable episode. One of my favorite of the season, for sure.
Well, this episode is definitely, like, it's almost like a Saving Private Ryan, that type of episode, right? You know, and I think, you know, like in Star Trek and other sci-fi series and other TV shows, like, they'll take something like that, you know, and, like, for example, I can't remember the episode name, but it was season 6 of TNG when Picard, when those terrorists are on the Enterprise and Picard's the only one on the ship and he's got to stop them, and, you know, Tuvok, well, the actor who plays Tuvok was there and so on and so forth. So basically it was like Die Hard in space, right? So this, like I said, this reminds me of Saving Private Ryan in space. You know, the end of Saving Private Ryan when they got to hold that tower.
Hell yeah. Hell for sure.
Yeah. But
hold those bridges.
Yeah, but for this one, they did it really well. Like, you know, the Die Hard in space with Picard was kind of cheesy, whereas this one, it didn't feel cheesy at all. Like, it felt really genuine. Like, they really did an excellent job. Richard, your thoughts, sir?
I really appreciate this episode because it just, it's a sobering vision of what war truly is. You know, even in Star Trek, we see a lot of ship battles, and it's not something that's as relatable in today's time because we don't have starships. But what we do have, or have had, is actual ground wars. And the loss of life is just, you know, unimaginable. In this episode alone, they talked about, I think it was 1,200 men and women have served and died defending this particular outpost, which is extremely important. And they're hoping that it's, 1,700 lives lost on AR-558. And they're hoping that it's worth that. That's everything that you can do, is just hope that what you're doing is worth the cost. It's the juice worth the squeeze. And it's just a great episode to show that. And some of the interplay between Dax and Callan, who I'm also a big fan of, also being a huge fan of Babylon 5, Bill Mumy, is just really great. I'm glad they had him in there. He did a really good job just, like, sliding into, you know, the Star Trek universe. He's a good actor. I really enjoy him, and he's great in Babylon 5 for almost pretty much the entire show. And then because of Dax's lifetimes of experience, she's able to help Callan figure out the Houdinis, the subspace mine type things. And that gives them an edge against the Jem'Hadar, which is really cool. It is sad, though, that Nog loses his leg, but in war, this is what happens. This is the reality of war.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows that, and it shows it very well.
Yeah. Yeah, it was especially hard to watch, given, you know, he was such a young man. You know, like that part is tough. But, you know, in a lot of our wars, like, especially like World War One, you know, and Two, most of them were that age. Like, they were young men that we were, you know, sending to fight for our freedom. And, yeah, like I said, they just hit it out of the park with this episode, I think. It was awesome. And this episode, like, I remember watching an interview with Aaron Eisenberg, and he said that he actually had, like, veterans come up to him, and, like, they were grateful for his, in this episode and for an episode we're going to be talking about here shortly, about, you know, him dealing with PTSD and all that kind of stuff. Like, he really did a good job in these episodes. All right, so the next episode is 159th of the series, 9th of the season, and that's Covenant, stardate unknown, directed by John Kretschmer, written by Rene Echevarria, original air date November 23rd, 1998. Dukat, now a religious leader of a Bajoran Paul Wraith cult, holds Kira hostage. Mika, one of Dukat's followers, gives birth to a half-Cardassian child. I wonder who the father is. Yeah, I don't like this episode. I really hate cult episodes. And when I say I hate cult episodes, because it's one of those things that they sometimes do in science fiction. They did it in later on in the 2000s with the new Battlestar Galactica. I say new, but it's like almost 20 years old now. Battlestar Galactica, where, what's his name? Baltar basically had like this cult, like he became like and I remember hating that then too. I'm like, god. But I mean, I guess that, I mean, that's what cults are, you know. Like, I don't know, I did not like this episode. And then of course we go back to Empok Nor, and I'm just thinking of the logistics of it all. Like, how are these people eating? Like, where are they getting their food? You know, like, Empok Nor was in shambles when we last saw it. But now, you know, they're making a go of it. You know, why? How is the Dominion not aware that they're there? And, you know, and all that. Again, I think this was a waste of an episode. I really think this episode, I would have been all for a Dukat episode. Don't get me wrong. I love Mark Alamo. I love Dukat. Like, do another episode of him losing his mind. I'm cool with that. But the whole cult angle, ugh, I did not like it at all. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
I'm with you, man. This episode's a little dry. The whole, you know, transport you from Deep Space Nine to Empok Nor.
Yeah.
That's a stretch for me. I get really hung up on the details, the logistics, like you say. Mm-hmm. I need to be able to maintain my suspension of disbelief, and that just shattered.
And you know what's funny? I completely forgot about that. That was a thing. Ugh.
Yeah.
Especially.
Yeah, the dude gave Kira, like, a stone. And it was like, yeah, magically we can just transport you light years now. Like, I don't know.
Well, not just that, but when they did the episode where they went, like, originally went to Empok Nor, it was a trip. You know, like O'Brien, yeah, Nog.
They packed food and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it's a ways.
Yeah, exactly. But, oh, sorry, Curtis, continue.
I don't know. I don't know if I had much more to say. It's, I don't really skip a lot of episodes, and I don't usually skip this one, but it's definitely a nap candidate, for sure.
I gotta try that. I'm a napper on my days off, so I really, what I should do is find these episodes that I don't really want to watch and just, like, go to sleep on them.
Do it, man. It's so refreshing, and then you're awake and you're ready for the next one.
Well,
and there's not really two Nap episodes in a row.
And not just that, but if you think, well, this Nap episode, and then it turns out, wait a second, actually, I don't mind this. Then you discover something, right? Because then you're not napping because you're watching.
You know, I watch Deep Space Nine pretty much once a year. It's part of my usual cycle of shows that I like to watch because it brings me comfort to, you know, experience the things that are familiar to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've all had a pretty stressful year. And, you know, finding what comforts you can and familiar things is good. So I've probably watched Deep Space Nine 7 or 8 times now. That's not a brag. That's just a statistic. Mm-hmm. And I still find new stuff every single time I watch it. I find something. Oh, shit. I didn't realize that last time. So it's totally worth it. But sneak in those Nap episodes where you can. I encourage you.
Oh, absolutely. And like I said, when we started this thing, when I did my rewatch, which is now going on actually 3 years, because it was last time I went to the Vulcan convention, I found myself in a Deep Space Nine trivia contest, which I won. And it just so happened I just finished my binge watching the entire series like a month before I went to that convention. So you never know when it's gonna come back to pay off. Richard, your thoughts, sir.
You know what? I like this episode.
Hmm.
It's not that it's a great episode by any means, mm-hmm. but it's definitely one of those episodes that, again, shows you the sobering reality of what is.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what a cult is. Like, literally, this is, you know, people following a deranged madman and doing what he says and, you know, being, you know, sexually advanced upon by him, you know, and these things happen in mm-hmm. real life. It does. It definitely does. A couple of, like, far-fetched things. We know that the Dominion does have extreme transport range. So, I mean, it kind of makes sense, you know, what they had to, you know, plot armor that one in there, right? Just to kind of make it more believable in some ways. And it makes sense that Ducat has that kind of cult of personality where, you know, people want to follow him and they want to listen to him, but really he's a complete and 100% charlatan fake.
Mm-hmm.
And they figure that out at the end. Sadly, Vedic Fala is just so upset by this news that he takes his own life. He's like, this is too much for me to handle, and he just, you know, pops the Kool-Aid pill and game over. But it's one of those episodes like AR-558 that it just... I'm not going to say like it's one of my favorite episodes, but it's definitely a good episode to show the reality of it. And it is the reality of it. It's sad, but it's true.
Yeah, that's an awesome perspective, man. That is a good way of thinking about it. And yeah, like the whole Dominion transport. Yeah, that again, that's something that we never really got answers to, which I would love to get answers to, which will lead into our next recording. But Ragnar, your thoughts on this episode?
Okay. First off, I want to say I hope I am never in a DS9 trivia contest against Richard, because I think he would decimate me.
You're probably
I think Curtis and I would do okay. We'd be pretty evenly matched. I suspect Chris would edge me out, but not by a whole lot. But Richard would just mop the floor with me.
I think Richard would mop the floor with all of us.
But, yeah, yeah.
But I feel like I would get the weird out of the left field questions, but Richard would trounce me on everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
just a little bit extra on that trivia thing. Several years ago, we had like a Star Trek watch party at the Meat Hall. I don't know if you were around for that, Curtis.
I was there for a couple.
And there was often trivias, and I often won them. And there was this one girl who was always like right on me, and we went back and forth. And it was and David as well. He's a great trivia guy. And yeah, it was definitely a thing I did, and it was a lot of fun.
Excellent.
Sorry to interrupt there.
Oh, no problem. Did everyone have a say on this episode?
Ragnar didn't really.
Ragnar. Yeah, I didn't quite get the finish, but I was just going to say, you know, I agree with you, what you were saying, Chris, about, you know, the cultist episodes, and especially in Battlestar Galactica. I mean, the ones at BSG were a little bit more fun because Balter was screwing everybody, so at least there was that. But as a whole, I agree with you. I think it's an interesting concept. I'm not even upset that they explored it, but I don't know. It just didn't quite work for me on some level. I'm not entirely sure how to word it better than that. But yeah. Anyways, yeah. It's, you know, it's interesting, and it's neat to see Dukat in a somewhat more deranged role almost. You know, he was always somebody who was
still screwing Bajoran women.
Yeah. Dukat was always somebody who was, you know, he always seemed like a man with a plan. And even when his plan didn't work, he'd build a new plan. But here, he really just feels like, you know, fuck it. I'm just going to go for it. I don't care. I don't have a plan. I'm just in it. And so it was kind of interesting to see that side of him. I guess more rash and impulsive than we're used to for Dukat.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Less controlled.
Sure. Yeah, certainly less controlled.
I do have one more thought when you're finished, Ragnar, about the
episode. Yeah, no, go for it, buddy.
I think that Dukat's hubris was his downfall here, because he really wanted to, you know, sway Kira, maybe convince her to join him, and that's what kind of brought him down. If she didn't show up, obviously plot armor for the episode, but had she not been there, it probably would have been mostly according to plan, you know?
You know, that brings up another interesting point. Dukat has a long established weakness for the Kira women. You'd think that she could have been like a little bit better kryptonite than they made her be. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I feel like maybe instead of having nap episodes, we could have had one where Kira just decimated Dukat somehow, drew him in like a moth, you know?
Yeah. I just. For this episode, I just wish we could have just had Dukat. Like, have Dukat looking for Paul Wraith artifacts, you know, like, still, you know, doing his thing that way, rather than the cult thing. But, anywho. All right, so next episode is 160 of the series, 10th of the season. It's Only a Paper Moon. Stardate 52235.7, directed by Anson Williams, story by David Allen Mack and John J. Ordovar. Teleplay by Ronald D. Moore. Original air date December 28th, 1998. Nog struggles with PTSD from the traumatic battle at AR-558, where he lost his leg. So he begins living with Vic Fontaine. I like this episode. You know, like, again, Aaron Eisenberg did such an amazing job playing Nog going through PTSD. And like I said, I think it was on the Deep Space Nine documentary when he talked about this, about how he's had real life soldiers come up to him and thank him for, you know, doing a real amazing job during, you know, of his portrayal of PTSD, which, you know, soldiers in particular struggle with. You know, like the Vic Fontaine angle was kind of cool. I like James Darren. I thought he did an excellent job acting with Aaron Eisenberg in this episode. And, yeah, overall, I really like this episode. Richard, your thoughts, sir?
I, too, really enjoy this episode because it does a really good job of portraying the after effects of what happens for war. These last few episodes are crazy, like, in certain ways. And I do. I'm a big fan of Vic Fontaine. I saw him live at one of the Vegas conventions. Excellent performer. And in the show, he has just like a very particular role that he plays well. And I think that the idea of Nog sort of trying to recover and like escaping really relates to me, because I would likely do something very similar as I would escape from reality. That's mostly why I play video games. I just want to get away from things for a while.
Yep.
So like this episode kind of like hit home that way too. And I just thought it was great. It's definitely not a skipper. Might be one of my like, you know, top 20 episodes as far as like just how real it is and how well Aaron Eisenberg just sort of like, you know, does it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and like you mentioned, Richard, about escaping reality, like you got to imagine like in this future, it's got to be really tough to go back to reality when you can be in a fully immersive reality of your creation. Like I told, yeah, like for Nog, you know, like he doesn't have to leave the holosuite. Like he can have food there. You know, I'm assuming, you know, you can go to the bathroom in a holosuite, no problem. Like he never has to leave. You know, and that's got to be tough. You know, like I guess, yeah, like, you know, unfortunately, you know, I don't know. We don't have that fully immersive escape. And I could just imagine how hard it would be to break that, especially if you're suffering from PTSD. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Well, you know, I always liked the character of Nog, but I never thought he was great until I saw this episode. And this episode, you really realize that, like, you know, Aaron Eisenberg, he can act. Mm-hmm. And, you know, perhaps they made Nog be, I don't know, dumbed down, a little bit goofier, shallower than the actor was capable of. Because when you watch this episode, it's just like, oh, wow. So this is a heavy episode. And to a certain extent, it's a slower episode. It's not necessarily a lot of like action, but it is very well written. It is very well acted, and it, you know, it rings true. This is an issue that we're still, you know, we still have soldiers with PTSD nowadays. We talk about it more than we used to. That's all that's changed. So yeah, I think this is a great episode. Definitely a standout and in my top three for the season for sure.
Yeah. Now that you mentioned that, Ragnar, like about how, you know, we talk about that now, when this was originally aired, don't think like people talked about it as much. So I think this was one of those episodes that really brought out that conversation. And I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, these soldiers, you know, would come up to Aaron Eisenberg and thank him for what he did with these episodes, because for the, you know, for some of them, I imagine maybe this was, you know, the nudge they needed to finally, you know, like I need to talk this out. I need to deal with this.
I think you're absolutely right there.
And again, great, that this is what makes Star Trek great, you know, is episodes like this. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Well, most of it's been said. You guys are absolutely right. It's like Star Trek's domain to sort of push boundaries socially. Always has been. And that's one of the more fun parts about it, because I myself grew up a little on the rebellious side. I don't know if you guys can pick up on that or not, but I always appreciated that aspect of many Star Trek series, TNG notably, which I haven't seen all of, by the way. But great episode as far as what we're talking about goes. Thoroughly enjoyed anything with Vic Fontaine. I don't think there's a Vic Fontaine episode I dislike. Sorry, Richard, but that includes his Mirror Universe appearance.
Fair enough.
Dual wielding pistols, fighting it out with Bashir. That's awesome. And I love the song, It's Only a Paper Moon. It's I'll find myself singing it just walking around the house making lunch and stuff for days after I watch this episode. Thoroughly enjoyable. and never an app episode at all.
Awesome.
You guys have pretty much said it all, so that's all I got.
Perfect. All right, so next episode of the series is 161, 11th of the season, and that's Prodigal Daughter, Stardate Unknown, directed by Victor Lobel, written by David Weddle and Bradley Thompson, original air date January 4th, 1999. Esri goes to New Sydney to find O'Brien and uncovers some disturbing family secrets. Miles goes in search of the widow of Liam Bilby, Monica Bilby, whom he befriended in an undercover operation. Not one of my favorite episodes. But it was okay. I'm just trying to find the name of that actor. Well, let's see here. I apologize. Oh, I think this is the actor. I don't know. Anyway, I apologize. The actor who played Esri's brother, he was also in the series Mad Men. I was trying to find his name, but I can't find him.
Is that the older in charge one or the artsy fartsy one?
The artsy fartsy one. Who, because, correct me if I'm wrong, he's the killer, right? Like, he killed her? Spoilers. Kevin Rahm is his name. Ram. So, yeah, he was on a number. Yeah, he played Ted Chaw on Mad Men. I also think he was on an episode of Seinfeld, if I remember correctly. But yeah, so anyway, it was an all right episode, not one of my favorites, but, it was kind of neat, I guess, to see Esri's family, get a little bit of backstory there. And that's about all I got. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
This is definitely one of the episodes that I skip. It's not really a bad episode,
mm-hmm.
and I think they had an interesting idea when they started with the episode, but I don't know, it's like they just didn't commit to it, or they didn't go far enough, or they didn't push the envelope at all, because it should have been a really, really engrossing episode, and it just kind of is like, So that's sort of how I feel about this episode.
Yep. Let's see here. Curtis, your thoughts.
Well, I will never be disappointed with any of the moments that the absolute angelic presence of Esri on the screen brings to my life. But this is a pretty weak episode plot-wise. Luckily, Esri is enough to keep me watching and not nap. But it bothers me that, I'm sorry, what was the widow's name again?
Monica?
Bilby.
Monica? Morica. Morica?
Morica. Well, Mrs. Bilby, anyway. It bothers me that she deserved a follow-up, and Thomas Riker didn't.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell? If I was Thomas Riker and I heard about that, I'd be pissed.
Yep.
Like, you know what I mean? Kira told him they'd come back for him, and they never did.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's really not a strong episode, I hate to say. Quite boring for me, personally. And just doesn't really have enough of a bearing on what's going on. Now, we've had episodes that were completely outside of, you know, the overarching plot of the season, but this one really just strikes a weird note.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Okay, you've got the Orions there, but, like, whoopee, we really didn't need them anymore, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But all I got.
All right. And, Richard, your thoughts?
That's a really good point that Curtis brings up. And me personally, I don't hate to say it. It's not a great episode. But it's just not there's no real substance. You know, it feels like a filler episode, and it was barely even an O'Brien suffers episode, because he just got beat up one time, and he barely suffered. Had he suffered more, I would have been more into it, you know what I mean? Like,
there was not enough O'Brien suffering in this episode. I demand a rewrite.
That's well, right, kick it up to 11, guys.
Well, that, and he got beat up off screen, right?
Yeah. You know, at least show him getting beat up something.
No satisfaction.
But the idea that, like, you know, Ezri's brother happened to be the bad guy and this and that, and the Orion Syndicate is strong-arming their corporation, blah, 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 just, for me...
And I'm supposed to buy into the idea of a corporation. Like, come on now, not for any reason, Trill.
Yeah.
Well, and not just that, but you gotta think of how vast the Federation is. Like, what are the odds that the new chick's family is going to be tied into O'Brien's, you know, former mission. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's
7 degrees of separation.
Yeah, I guess so.
Billions of humans in the Federation, plus the Tellarites, the Vulcans,
yep.
the Trill, the Andorians,
Andorians,
whoever the hell else is in there. I can't even name any, can you?
Yeah, like, what are the odds, man? Like, ugh. Anyway.
That's pretty much it. I mean, for me, it's usually a skipper.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. All right. Well, next episode of the series is 162, 12th of the season, and that's The Emperor's New Cloak, Stardate Unknown, directed by LeVar Burton, Geordi LaForge himself. Written by Ira Stephen Baer and Hans Beimler. Original air date February 1st, 1999. Quark and Rom cross into the alternate universe to rescue Grand Nega Zek. Kazek was over there making a deal for cloaking devices. Thank God this was the final Mirror Universe episode. Yeah. And aside from seeing the human version of Vic Fontaine, which at the time I didn't understand, I'm like, what the hell is this guy? Who is this guy? I hate continuity errors. I hate them. I hate them. I hate them. That's why one of the reasons why I hate Star Trek Discovery so much. In this episode, Zek says they don't have cloaking technology in the Mirror Universe, but yet we've seen cloaking technology in the Mirror Universe in previous episodes. So that...
Happy?
We did. Yes, we did. It would have been... I think it was season 3. It was when...
I believe you. I just desperately want to remember.
I'm trying to think. I think it was when Sisko, or when they're trying to get Sisko's Mirror Universe wife on board, and they had cloaking technology then. Like, I know I've seen it. I know I've seen it.
I actually don't recall that. I'm going to have to look into it, because I have no idea where it would be.
There is, and the reason why I remember it so clearly is there's actually a video on YouTube of continuity errors in Star Trek, and this is one of them. And they actually have Grand Nega Zek talking about, they don't have cloaking technology in this universe. And then the next shot is, meanwhile, in the alternate universe, you see ships decloaking in a previous episode. So, yeah, that's on YouTube. I think continuity errors in Star Trek. And this is one of them. I really dislike how much we got beat over the head with these Mirror Universe episodes. And this is, I think, the worst by far. Yep. And it just sucks that, you know... for me, anyway, like, it just went out on a whimper. This was our last... I mean, we see Zek later towards the end of the series, but this is, like, his last episode, you know, episode. Like, I just wish we could have done something different with Zek. You know, like, I love Zek, and I just felt he was underutilized here. And then, yeah, as the alternate Ezri and alternate Leda... Maybe they're going to hook up. I guess that's a thing. Anyway.
I suspect Curtis will want to talk about that.
But yes, I don't like this episode. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Well, Mirror Esri and Kira make out.
Oh, right. Yes, they do.
I don't even need anything else going on in the episode. But the fact that Vic Fontaine was in a shootout with Julian Bashir. Now, it's a completely silly episode. Absolutely. It doesn't really... There's some things that really don't make sense. But as usual, Esri serves to bolster my suspension of disbelief. Maybe that's a failing on my own part. I don't know. But I really enjoy it. We started out the season with some sillier episodes, and then we got real serious and we got dark, and we, you know, were faced with some really chilling ideas and some deep things to ponder. And now we have Quark and Rom pretending, well, the actors ostensibly pretending to carry this heavy cloaking device around, and they're admiring the paint when they get caught, and like it's just so slapstick almost, like it's like watching a Saturday morning cartoon in Star Trek form, with the added bonus of, you know, I don't know if I mentioned it or not, but Mirror Esri and Mirror Kira totally make out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a high point for me personally. Enjoyable for me, but not I will concede that it really doesn't fit at all.
Yeah. But I will say the making out part was quite excellent.
Thoroughly good. I will call it thoroughly good.
Yeah, some good acting. Richard, your thoughts, sir?
Well, I don't know if you guys know, but Mira Esri and Mira Lita have a moment, and it's a pretty good moment, and it's a debriefing. Just so you know, and nothing is going on here. You can move along now.
And it was probably the most fan fiction written scene in Star Trek.
Most likely. I do appreciate, you know, the use of the Nagvar class flagship for the Klingons, which is kind of cool. The plot is so firmly encased in plot armor, I'm not sure that there's anything else worth about this episode, except Curtis is right. Vic Fontaine dual-wielding pistols is hilarious. It is a fantastic thing. And again, I don't care for Deep Space Nine mirror episodes. I don't know, something about them, I just can't get my head around them. Enterprise and their mirror episode was top-notch. One of my favorites, actually. Probably one of the only mirror episodes that I actually enjoy, and I can't wait to get to it. I'm actually currently watching Enterprise. I'm already halfway through season three, and I can't wait till we talk about it.
Would T'Pol's uniform have anything to do with that?
It might. It might. No spoilers, but it might. But aside from that, this is not a good episode. I could have completely done without. They could have just had 45 minutes of a loop of Esri making out with, you know, a female actress on the show, and that would have been fine for me.
I, you know what? Email me after this. We'll talk.
So I can't. I was looking on YouTube to see if I could find that video. This was years ago. I watched. I can't find it, but I did find a reference on Google, and it's on one of the questions. In The Emperor's New Cloak, Grand Nagusek foolishly travels to the Mirror Universe looking for a new business opportunities and is captured by Regent Worf. Mirror Worf demands a ransom of a cloaking device from Quark and Rom, who steal one from the IKS Ratarin. However, in Through the Looking Glass, Season 3, Episode 19, we see the Alliance already has cloaking technology when one Klingon and two Cardassian vessels decloak around a rebel fighter. So why does the Regent want a cloaking device? And then the consensus, this is the first answer, is out of the universe, I classify this one of the many inconsistencies of Star Trek due to episodes being written by many different authors in the universe.
Well, I was going to say, if that's season three, I believe that's just before Ira Stephen Bear stepped in.
I think that was Ira Stephen Bear, that was his first season as showrunner. Ira Stephen Bear, he was there from the beginning. It's just Michael Piller was the showrunner for season one and two, and then Ira Stephen Baer took over.
Okay. But actually, I do have one more point to make when you have a second.
Sure, absolutely. Go ahead, Richard.
As far as continuity errors, we know that Star Trek has them.
Oh, yeah.
And Star Trek Discovery has a lot of them.
Oh, but
there are better reasons to hate Discovery than that. Because I can get behind continuity errors. I like finding them. I think it's fun.
Like Lieutenant O'Brien.
Yeah, that was a great one. Aside from that, like, there's so many good reasons to hate Discovery. That's not even on my list, just because it's not worth, you know, the effort for it. Mm-hmm. Because there's so many continuity errors in Star Trek. It's just like, for me, it's just like a fun Easter egg thing. I'd rather focus on the real reasons why Discovery sucks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it's
that's all I got to say about that.
It's definitely not just continuity errors. And the thing with this continuity error is maybe it can be explained. Like, maybe the cloaking devices previously used by the Alliance, maybe, you know, they're trackable. Maybe they need a different type of cloaking device so the Rebels can't track the Alliance ships. Maybe that's the reason behind it. You know? Maybe Zek just misspoke, you know. But anyway, Ragnar, your thoughts, sir.
Well, I gotta agree with you. Thank God this is the last Mirror Universe episode. The Mirror Universe started out as an interesting concept. There was a couple of them that were okay, but as time went on, it just, like, everyone was just like, oh, another Mirror Universe episode? Ugh. So, yeah, it was neat how they brought in Ezri and they worked Vic Fontaine into the Mirror Universe too, but, like, this is just not a good episode. It's one of the ones that I'm like, this is one of the episodes that people who have watched Deep Space Nine and didn't like it cite to me as a reason why they don't like the show. And I can't help but agree with them. This is not a good episode. So I don't really recommend it. I don't think you need to watch it. I don't think it adds anything to the overall story of Deep Space Nine. I think you could completely skip it and pretend it never happened.
I would rebut that with there is one, well, other than what I've already said, there is redeeming quality. We got Good Guy Brunt for an episode.
Oh, yeah, right.
That's true.
Oh, okay.
That was pretty cool. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, I really loved the very first Mirror Universe episode they did. Season 2, I thought that was amazing. You know, seeing Tarok Nor being used as, you know, as a mining station, and you know, Odo getting blown up, I thought that was cool. Seeing Kira walking around, like, you know, in her intendant uniform, super sexy. And that's where it should have stopped. It should have just been a one-off, like the original series Mirror episode. It was just a one-off. And it's forever iconic, right? Whereas when they kept doing these episodes, I think it took away from that initial episode. Like, had they not done any more Mirror Universe episodes except for that first one, I think people would cite that episode as being one of the best Deep Space Nine episodes. And I just think that all these other episodes that they did just kind of took away from how special that first one was. But anyway, that's all I got for Mirror Universe episodes. So we'll move on to the last episode we're going to discuss for this podcast episode, and it's episode 163 of the series, 13th of the season, and that is Field of Fire, Stardate Unknown, directed by Tony Dow, written by Robert Hewitt Wolf. Ezri summons Duran, a homicidal Dax incarnation from her past, for help in understanding the mind of a serial killer loose on the station. Original air date, February 8th, 1999. I didn't mind this episode. I like this idea that, you know, to get into the mind of a killer, to find a killer, you got to get into the mind of a killer. I kind of like that. And I like that, you know, Ezri has that option. You know, like, she can just call up Duran and be like, hey, I need your help here. you know, not one of the best episodes. I like this episode. And if I remember correctly, originally, wasn't the character that got killed, the young Chinese guy, wasn't he supposed to be Harry Kim's brother or something originally, but then they changed it?
Oh, I'm not sure. That would be cool.
Yeah, because I thought that's what he... Because I remember originally when I saw it, I thought someone told me that that's Harry's brother. I'm like, really? Oh, that's too bad. You know, like, you know, that his little brother got killed. But then, yeah, looking it up, his name was Hector Ilario? So, yeah, it wasn't Harry Kim's brother. But anyway, I think that would have been a cool little Easter egg had they done that. All right. Richard, your thoughts on this episode, sir?
Honestly, I love this episode. It gives me a real, like, Silence of the Lambs kind of feel.
Yes.
You know, like, yep. Hannibal Lecter.
Yep.
And I love that because I enjoy the Silence of the Lambs movies.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, Red Dragon and Hannibal, like, they're good movies. And this really just gives me that feeling. And just, you know, seeing how close Esri was to just, like, pulling that trigger. She was in the mind of the killer. Mm-hmm. She's not a killer, but she definitely felt that power, you know?
Yep.
And that was just I think it's a really good Esri-centric episode. Kind of shows us, like, you know, what she's capable of, and, you know, her acting, I think, is all is really good. And I just really enjoyed the episode.
Excellent. Ragnar, your thoughts?
Pretty much have to agree with, you know, most of what Richard was saying there. I will say, you know, we've seen this concept done, mm-hmm, both before this episode and since, and lots of other people have done this concept better. But it was still an interesting episode, or an interesting concept to explore, and it was, you know, I enjoy this episode. I just think it was a little almost cheesy at times, I guess. But, it's interesting, and it's good, and it, you know, it certainly reinforces the fact that they're really trying to just recast Jadzia Dax here by bringing this in. You know, it just proves, like, yeah, this is supposed to be the same character, just, you know, we had to get rid of her.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a good episode for what it is. Yeah, absolutely.
Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
I love this episode myself. This is like the quintessential Esri Dax episode for me. She had others for sure, but I really like this one. You really get to see what Nicole DeBoer can do with this character,
mm-hmm,
and just how she portrays someone interacting with a darker facet of herself. That had to be fun to wrap your head around it and have to portray, but you get to do it while there's another actor physically there to represent that. That had to be some of the most fun that a person could have had, in my view. I love the darker moments where, you know, Duran's right in her ear telling her all this stuff and pull the trigger, and oh my god, it just all works for me. There's something about a chick with a gun too, just saying that, boys. Girl who knows how to handle her firearms. Whew. Key to my heart, fine, we'll say that.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Definitely enjoyable. And easily my favorite Esri episode by leaps and bounds. But I also love just the way that they wrote it, and they composed the scenes so that we could experience this person, just this unique interaction,
mm-hmm,
that no one else could have had. And I can appreciate that Jadzia couldn't have done this the same way. Esri is naive and timid,
mm-hmm,
at points, and Jadzia is not at all. Duran would not have been able to push Jadzia around even a little bit. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that we got to see this basically because of Ezri. I don't think we could have had this episode.
And we also see Jadzia not being pushed around in that way when it was Sisko who was being inhabited by Duran. So you could tell that.
And yes, Odo was Curzon, too. She's had no problem, you know,
standing up
hitting back at her past hosts. But the fact that Ezri was vulnerable to that sort of thing really just sort of helped everything in this episode come together, I think.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. All right, gentlemen. That is a wrap for our Season 7.0 discussion. But this isn't it for Deep Space Nine. No, we still have the last half of Season 7 to discuss. But before we get to that, we actually, like, the way I'm figuring things here, we got three more Deep Space Nine episodes to go. So next episode, we're doing another topic-based episode with the Deep Space Nine discussion panel. And our topic is, what would you have liked to have seen on DS9? Some of the suggestions that I had were, I wanted to see Worf's parents. You know, like, we saw them on TNG. I wanted to see them come to Deep Space Nine. I love those actors, Worf's parents.
Elena and, what was his dad's name?
Sergey.
Sergey.
Yeah.
Elena and Sergey Rodchenko.
Yep.
He's probably got all the schematics at home, I bet you.
Yep.
Yeah, he has the schematics of Deep Space Nine.
And we already mentioned it on this episode, Thomas Riker. I wanted to see his storyline resolved. We never got to see that. So that's what we're going to be bringing to the table and discussing what we would like to have seen on Deep Space Nine. Then we will do our Season 7.5, where we'll go over the last half of the Deep Space Nine final season episodes. And then we will do an episode where it's basically our wrap-up party. I think we're going to have a few beverages for our wrap-up party. And we're going to just basically discuss...
Sponsored by RagnarTheTrader.com.
Yep. Yep.
It's true.
And basically, we're going to just discuss Deep Space Nine top to bottom as a whole. Like, you know, what we loved about it, what we didn't love about it, our final thoughts on the series. So there's three more episodes of the Deep Space Nine discussion panel before we transition to the Enterprise discussion panel. All right. So before we go, let's play that little game of where can we find you on the internet. If you want to check out my blogs, go to randomnerdist.blogspot.com. At the time of this recording, I just put up a blog post about attending the Masters of the Universe Power Tour in 1987 at Northlands Coliseum in Edmonton,
you
Alberta.
You got to go to that?
I did. Yep.
Oh, wow.
I don't remember a whole lot other than She-Ra being absolutely beautiful. I was only 7 years old at the time. Yeah, I got to go. And
wow.
Yeah, so if you want to, I got more pictures on there if you want to check it out, Ragnar.
I'm all over that.
Unfortunately, they're not pictures of me. I don't think we took pictures of us there, but they're pictures from the tour. Cool. So yeah, that's randomnerdness.blogspot.com. Richard, where can we find you, sir?
You can't really on normal places. You can find me on gab.com, Monk1002, or Parler. Aside from that, just check out Ragnar's website. It's way cooler than anything I have to offer.
Oh, agreed, absolutely. Curtis, can we find you anywhere, or are you just hanging over at Ragnar's website?
Now you can, actually. I, too, decided to migrate over to Gab. My handle is @SwordLogic, all one word. There's almost nothing there. I'm never on it, but I am there, kind of. More to the point, I'm ordering my new microphone next month, and I'll be looking at starting up my own little podcast. I'm going to be talking about Lost in a lot more in-depth than when we cover it in the future. So don't worry. We'll still have lots of material to talk about on this podcast. But in order to keep me quiet when everyone else needs to talk, I'm going to have another outlet so that I can reference it and sort of point anyone who's interested in deeper explanations over to that podcast, because I could go on and on. I can give you an hour and a half episode on every episode of that show.
Well, if you ever need someone to guest on there, I'd be happy to guest, because I'm one of those Lost fans too.
Right on, man. You'll be the first guy I call.
Yeah, I'm forever explaining to people, you know, people that don't understand.
They were not dead.
Yeah, they were not dead. Anyway.
My parents just finished it. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And before I get to Ragnar, so what is this? Where are you guys at? Like, what's this platform you guys are on?
It's an alt-tech platform that is less about censorship and more about freedom of speech.
It's basically
an alternative to your standard mainline tech platforms, Facebook, Twitter. Things are just getting a little too heated lately. You know, it's a very stressful and frustrating experience. So I just went to a quieter sort of corner of the internet.
Okay. No, that's cool. It's just, yeah, there's so many.
There's dog pictures and cat memes like Facebook used to be. It's really nice.
Awesome. Awesome.
Exactly.
All right. I'll have to check that out. Ragnar, where can we find you, good sir?
Well, RagnarTheTrader.com is my main website. I'm also on Etsy as Ragnar the Trader, and of course I'm on Instagram and Facebook. Just search Ragnar the Trader, and I'm sure I'll come up right away. In normal times, in the before times, my main thing was face-to-face appearances at shows all across Western Canada. Wasn't very many of those last year, and as it stands right now, it doesn't look like there's going to be very many this year, but I can't wait to get back to it because I miss seeing everybody.
I hear you.
I have to throw in a quick endorsement. I ordered my beard product finally that I've been talking about for a month.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to say, the little horn mugs that Ragnar's got are just absolutely top quality. We have a couple of them here in the house, and the latest one actually has carved into it, "Glory to your house," the symbol of the Klingon Empire. And it's just fantastic. The girlfriend and I got a huge kick out of it when we received it.
Yep.
Absolutely. We'll be using those little items to have around.
Yep. We'll yeah, big kudos. We'll
be using those in, what, three episodes?
Yep. Yeah, big kudos to Ragnar for that, because he sent us all one. And that is what we'll be using to drink out of on our wrap-up party. I'm looking forward
to
that.
Bring a moonshine. What do you guys got?
Scotch.
I'm going to try some of the scotch Ragnar recommended. I've never done scotch.
It's good.
I actually think I'm going to buy some of the liquor from the local distillery west of the 5th.
Get the damn moonshine, buddy.
Yeah. Trust. I love, there's so many good varieties there that I love. Except for the pickles. I can't do liquored pickles. But
those on pizza or burger.
Now I need to try. I have to know.
I met one of the owners of the distillery at a craft show, and I ended up going out for barbecue with him. Can't remember his name, but I would recognize him in a heartbeat.
They're all great guys.
Yeah. And yeah, seemed like a solid dude. And we had good barbecue and lots of great drinks.
Yeah,
good place.
We had a Babe Crave party a couple of years back when we had parties, and West of the 5th sponsored it, and they showed up with tons of alcohol, and I bet you they probably made 100 new clients just from that party.
Yep.
Awesome.
Yeah, no, they're a great group of guys, and they just opened a bar here in Barrhead, which I love. I love going there. I love... Because they got craft beer on tap. I'm a big craft beer guy, and their food is amazing. It's so good. And they got an open patio in the summer. Yet? What's that?
Are we allowed to do bars again yet?
Yep.
I haven't been keeping up. Well, Richard, what do you think about a trip to Barrhead soon, buddy?
You know what? If we're gonna have a little party at West the 5th, I am in, my friends.
Yeah, we should definitely do that. I want to wait a little bit more. Let's wait for the spring. because they have a patio, and I love sitting in their patio. They put the big screens outside too, and you can watch, you know, whatever sports they got on. It's a lot of fun. I've had a
yay sports.
We'll drive them to watch Star Trek for a night.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
We're going to take home a case of moonshine. Trust. Just put the Star Trek on, buddy.
But I got to say,
on the DS9 episode where they play baseball.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah.
Exactly.
They have
Ezri Kira makeout loop for 45 minutes.
they started as like a brewery and a distillery at their home. Like, they actually have like a nice like gardens. I haven't been there myself, but I know my mom and them went on a tour, and they just said it's amazingly beautiful. And yeah, like, they're super nice guys. So. Yeah, and yeah, let's plan it for the summer. Hopefully Ragnar can come, and then let's record a podcast.
Hell yeah,
dude, let's do it.
Yeah,
great. Just like that first podcast that we had out there. Remember?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'll talk. Well, maybe I'll talk to my brother-in-law, because he was the one that set that all up, because he's got all the equipment, because he's a sound engineer by trade. Maybe we could record the podcast at their house and then go to the West of the Fifth and get our drink on. That's what I'm thinking.
That sounds great.
Excellent. Okay. All right. Well, Ragnar, did I ask you where we could find you?
Yeah, we did that.
Oh, okay. Excellent. All right. Well, I guess we can call this an episode. And I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. This was our Deep Space Nine discussion panel, and we were discussing Deep Space Nine Season 7.0. And we will see you again in the not-too-distant future.